Welcome to Activate Yourself with Gita Sidhu Rob, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Gita Sidhu Rob.
Hi, this is Activate Yourself. My name is Gita Sidhu Rob, and I want you to welcome a good friend and an ally in a metaphorical and a literal sense, which I'm sure you've had said to you often enough, Robert. The really, really talented Robert Baker, who has a lot of experience in the area of allyship, working as allies, creating allies, helping men to become allies, and making really allyship understandable and accessible for women. So thank you very much for joining me, Robert.
No, it's a pleasure, Gita. It's really great to be with you. And obviously, this is my favorite topic. So looking forward to our discussion.
Yes, exactly. The thing I'm interested in and why I wanted to have this conversation now is when you look at what's come through down the pipeline through the US on DEI and the huge shift that's happened around DEI, I am fascinated by how that has affected how allyship happens, or does it not affect it in any way? Because to me, this is an interesting conversation I don't hear happening in many places.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, actually. And of course, like all these things, it can be quite complicated. I mean, the point is that what's come through from the US is very much been a pushback on diversity, equity, and inclusion. There's also been a kind of underlying trend, if you like, of thinking about, you know, masculine things being good. So Mark Zuckerberg famously called for more masculine energy, right, in the workplace, etc. And of course, the way that, you know, dare I say, Elon Musk, you know, works, you know, that's kind of almost 24/7 sleep under the desk kind of thing. It's a, you know, some of the tech companies are kind of getting the sense of a more bro culture, right, which is kind of very interesting. So in that whole environment, how does that play out for men that want to support gender equality, men that want to support inclusion? How does it play out for companies that want to focus on that? And what's I think been interesting is that, like, the US has definitely seen companies, you know, stand up for their principles of diversity, equity, inclusion. A number of companies that I'm aware of have certainly, you know, the CEOs have come out and said, this is still important to us because we believe it's the way to attract and retain the best talent. And that's what we're interested in focusing on. Now, they might change and relabel what they do, but there's still quite a lot of companies who are pursuing what you might have previously called diversity, equity, and inclusion pathways, but just, you know, in a different way. I think in Europe, we've been a bit, obviously, we've felt the, you know, a less direct and immediate impact. So a lot of more companies in Europe are focusing on the business case for diversity, equity, and inclusion, which means that they want to continue to focus on talent and the competitive advantage that comes from getting the best talent. Yeah. And so that's still a focus for them. Now, in all of this, what they realize is at the same time as this conversation has been going on, the position of women has been getting worse in the workplace. Okay. So in the US, we've seen women leaving the workplace. It's particularly bad for women of color. We're also seeing issues and challenges for women in the workplace in Europe. Okay. Where it's becoming potentially a more challenging environment. When you add in the impact of AI and all the things that we're expecting, it doesn't seem to be any better now than it would have been a few years ago, which is disappointing because I think we'd all hope for more progress. There's been some, but probably not enough. So in that environment, you've got to ask the question, well, how do we shift a few levers to make this better? And how do we make a workplace that works better for women? Well, of course, one of the big constituencies you've got to engage is men. And because men are in positions of power and in positions of leadership, and if you get them engaged in this, then things move faster. So then the question becomes, well, how do we approach men about this topic, you know, in an environment where there's pushback and an environment where it's more challenging for women? And I think, you know, one of the things that we have to clearly do is speak to men where they are. And some men are worried about the fact that in the past, the focus on women is led to challenges for them, and their worries about promotions, etc. But I think actually there's still quite a significant group of men out there that want to do the right thing. They want to pursue justice and fairness for everybody. They are concerned about the workplace for women. They think about, you know, women in their own lives. They might have a working partner. They might have daughters coming into the workplace. They might be thinking, you know, like, how do we address? So I'm sort of seeing that there has been a shift, if you like, but the shift has not necessarily been to diminish allyship. I think what happened is the landscape for allyship has changed a bit. And so what we're now saying is, look, in an environment, especially in Europe, where companies are continuing to prioritize the importance of inclusion and gender balance, we need male allies to step up even more, basically. And yeah. I think what I'm finding is that men are responding to a lot of men are responding to that challenge. They are stepping up, but they're sort of saying, what do I need to do? You know, because I'm not, I kind of, you've got me on the sense that I need to be involved, but what is it I need to do? And that's where I'm finding a lot of the efforts that I'm putting in now are bearing fruit. It's helping them realize how to be better allies. It's helping them basically understand their why as well, you know, articulate that as well as leaders, you know, why is it important? And then obviously what they can do to bring more gender equality, more inclusion in their organization as allies. So that's kind of how it's been changing. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I like that. I mean, nature does abhor a vacuum. So when you create space, it's going to be filled by something and someone, right? And I think that I'm very heartened by the fact that America has rolled back women's rights to such a large extent. And I've only just got started. There's so much more planned in terms of voting rights and family voting instead of, you know, one person, one family, one vote, which is really literally anti-diluvian. So when you're looking at that, it's one of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation, because what I had seen again and again, you definitely see the men who go, oh, well, it's okay. It doesn't matter what I say now because I can say anything I want.
Yeah.
But you also have the men that say, well, if you can't, I can. What can I do? Because I want to do something. It's that. It's also, I spent the weekend in Germany and I was talking to the head of German Telecom, which is the largest national, it's the national telecom business, and the CEO was saying, you know, what I'm interested in is the fact that I have two daughters.
Yes.
And because I have two daughters, I'm interested in what I can do, because I have to do something to make the world better for them. And those things give me a lot of heart.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I hear that, believe me, from a number of men that I coach and work with. So for example, there's a guy called Nicholas Weigand, who is one of the leaders of ENGIE in Germany. He came on to a webinar that I ran a while ago talking about, you know, one of the reasons he was doing this because he had a daughter. But the other reason he talked about it was it's important for the business. Okay. And that was critical. I think one of the changes that we're seeing, and I think we've really got to reflect on this, is that younger men in the workforce often now are trying to advance their careers alongside their partners. So if they're in a heterosexual relationship, it could quite often be the case that the woman in the relationship also has a demanding and challenging career.
Yeah,
so exactly. I'm coaching at the moment a young man with a wife with a demanding career, just as demanding as his. They've got two young children. And what he's trying to balance up now is, how does he respond to a job which is very demanding within the organization he works for, and yet still play the role of a, you know, committed and, you know, a 50-50 partner in the household, along with his wife, who's got a very demanding job. And it came to a real head recently because he's in France and the French canteen workers at the school were on strike. So the children had to be fed at home during lunchtime. And his wife had an important meeting, right? She had to go to for her company. So he ended up being the one working from home, making the kids lunch, you know, and like, this was like, welcome to the new reality, you know. Now, going back a few decades, that probably wouldn't have happened because it would have been the woman who would be at home with the kids.
And go back decades. We could go back to lockdown when the women were working doing dinner and lunch and everything else because the kids were at home too. And it happened again and again. We had 21,000 women on our database.
Right.
And they just told every single, we rang 2,500 of them over lockdown and said, how are you doing? They're like, thanks for asking, we're dying.
God,
know, we're doing, and it wasn't until it all came into the same space that people realized how absolutely imbalanced it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm hoping is in that environment, there were conversations held in each household about, well, how do we divide things up? Because we cannot carry on in an environment where we both have got responsibility for the kids and yet we both have got jobs, you know, that demand this of us. And as you said, the lockdown was a classic, you know, kind of fulcrum for these discussions. And then what you're hoping as things return after the after lockdown, that there's still some ways in which younger men and now have different expectations to maybe their fathers in the workplace, where they have a working partner, where they also want to balance their careers with being a more balanced partner, as it were, doing more at home, more caring responsibilities, and I think that is creating some differences to what we might have seen. Now, what you were debating was, well, actually, I mean, I mentioned this was, you know, a change compared to decades ago. You said actually, you saw this come into real focus in lockdown, where women were saying, look, you know, despite where we're supposed to be in the 21st century, actually, we still bear the bulk of responsibility for the
Well, we
home.
certainly did when lockdown started. But let's go for a little break and then we'll come back and we'll discuss actually if lockdown made a material difference or not. Because I know it did from the women's side, and I'd love to hear about what it did in, from your experience.
Okay.
We'll go on a short break.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we've had our break. What do you think? Do you think lockdown created a difference or visibility of the problem?
Well, I think absolutely. I think it created more awareness. What I'm hoping is there were conversations held in each household about, well, how do we balance up our workload, our caring load, as it were? How do we make sure that neither of us feels burnt out? Because I think what was happening was women were getting burnt out, I think, as you mentioned. And of course, then it's a question of how does each individual man, for example, respond, and how does each individual woman respond to that in their relationships? You know, are they having conversations that come to productive outcomes around how they divide things up? I think what I'm saying is, I think, you know, what's flowing into allyship now is a recognition that men as allies is okay, men supporting women in the workplace, but also men doing their fair share at home. And in a sense, also allyship broadening out so that it's actually about helping each other. It's not just about, you know, one group, you know, being allies for the other. So I'm seeing a broader conversation opening up now about allyship, which I think is welcome anyway, because while gender equality and gender is still one of the biggest issues in the workplace, there's no doubt that people also have an appetite to address other imbalances, which is, for example, you know, well, what's the position of people with abilities or different abilities, for example, or you know, maybe have different preferences in other ways. So it's kind of interesting to see how this is evolving in the light of the experiences we've had and in the light of different generations coming into the workforce, which I think has made a difference.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at it, men in relationships, men are so hardwired to provide. And if allyship can be altered so that expanded, so that the provision can take into account the new reality, I think that that makes allyship very valuable. It's still allyship. It's just allyship in time and money and support and housework, I suppose, as opposed to just in one way.
Oh, absolutely. So men used to be seen as the breadwinner, as they call it, okay, which is about providing the cash, if you like, that made the household work. I think what we're now talking about is a much bigger picture where we look at the time they spend, the caring responsibilities they have, and how that whole thing gets divided up with their partner. So I think that's a much more healthy conversation. Having said that, right, it's really hard for men who have been socialized to be the breadwinner, to be the one in the relationship that might be not earning as much as they did or even earning less than their wife. And I know a couple of men who are exactly in that situation. And these are men that are actually quite enlightened and you would regard them as allies. They said, no matter what I believe in, you know, in theory, the actual gut reality is it still feels, you know, awkward for me to earn less than my wife or to be heavily relying on her income.
Failed.
I probably should have had more conversation with him about it, but I think there's an element of that, you know, in the sense that if the still commonly accepted social yardstick for a man is one that out-earns his wife, if suddenly he's earning less, then I suppose in a sense they might feel they're failed. A lot of this is how you frame it. I mean, what I would personally sort of say is let's look at your contribution over the whole piece. You know, so it isn't just about what you bring in cash or money. It's about what you give in total. And I think if we can change that frame and have that conversation around that, I think, you know, we can help people not feel guilty about the fact that they're maybe not the biggest earner in the household anymore.
I really love this conversation because the majority of my clients, as you know, are women that earn an enormous amount of money and are highly successful. And I'm always speaking to them from the women's point of view, but perhaps you could actually, this is completely a detour from what you're meant to talk about, but what is it that men are feeling and thinking when, so that women have a better handle on it when they're earning less? Because this is, I was reading, okay, so let me just put this into context. I've been looking a lot recently because one of the magazines, was it Vogue, that said it's unfashionable to have a boyfriend? It's unfashionable to be in a relationship with a man. And there was this whole thing around it in social media. And it was huge. Anna Wintour did this article. And when you're looking at it, women are saying there's this huge epidemic of male loneliness in the US. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And women are basically saying, listen, if we take money off the table because we're earning enough money to pay for our own bills, what is it you're bringing to the relationship?
Yeah.
And it apparently men are finding this a difficult role to step into. So in my life, this has not been the case, but I know that in a lot of the women that I coach, this is the case. So could you speak to the man part of that?
Well, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it's what is my role as a man in a relationship? Let's call it a heterosexual relationship with a woman. You know, like I said, it used to be about providing security, whether that's, you know, financial and physical security, etc. But I think increasingly women also want, and I think men kind of are starting to feel the need to be, you know, emotional partners as well, you know, to be able to, you know, have dialogue with female partners, which is something that shows they're listening to what the women are saying, that they're engaging with it. They've got something interesting to talk about other than just, you know, what's going on at work, for example. So I think men are being asked to step up a bit to be, you know, more mature partners. Now, I think one of the challenges is that women have often said for a while, you know, it's harder with younger men because they haven't quite got there yet. Whereas, you know, we like older men because basically they're now aware of the fact that you know, they need to give more than just money. They need to bring a personality. They need to bring interesting insights. You know, they need to basically intellectually thrill me as well as thrill me in other ways, right? And what we've seen is some women saying, "Look, you know, I'm going to get," they're saying, "I'm going to get divorced in my 50s or 60s because the man partner that I picked might have been for all the right reasons back then, but now, you know, I'm not getting what I need from that man. You know, and just getting money is not enough. I need someone who really engages with me on an intellectual and emotional level." And this is the bit that men are finding a bit tricky. So how the hell do we do that? You know, I mean, when we haven't been historically that good at expressing our emotions, we haven't been historically that good at those things, right? And building friendships and learning how to talk about stuff, you know. So it's very interesting now. I mean, so women are saying, right, yeah, I don't want a man because, frankly, I've got to babysit that man, right? I've got to, you know, they want feeding, they want looking after, you know, they want being prodded to go to the doctors. You know, like there's so many things where women are saying, like, you know, it's like a man child I have in my relationship. Whereas what I really want is someone who I said, you know, kind of thrills me and fulfills me intellectually and emotionally. And you see that playing out with a lot of men thinking, where do I fit in anymore? You know, like the old model
Yeah,
is
so what
broken.
is it that you say to them?
Well, I think the first thing I think is like all these things is to raise awareness and say, look, you know, this is potentially going on here. So are you aware actually that the landscape's changing? And you know, and what women are wanting from men evolves over time, you know. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to encourage them to want to get into that space. And this is interesting because men can start talking to other men to exercise their emotional side. You know, they don't have to. You know, because if they're concerned about how this comes out in speaking to a woman, they can actually speak to other men. So in the men's groups that I run or I'm involved with, listening to the men talking to other men about their emotions is actually really quite sweet in a way, because you know that's something that maybe they haven't done so much. And if the more practice they have at doing that, the easier then they're going to find it to bring it into, you know, their heterosexual relationship and talk to their partner about it. You know, because it's quite interesting. Some of these things mean admitting vulnerability, right? So when I see conversation between two men, and one of them's being vulnerable, you think, wow, how's that going to play out? Can they feel equally as vulnerable in front of their female partner, for example? And this is where these old socializations of, well, the man's always got to be strong and
Yeah.
tough and never got to be the one that's emotionally needy. That's where those, you know, those things break down. And so I think we need a new awareness, but we also need to equip men a bit better. And we can equip ourselves. Obviously, we have to take responsibility for it. We have to equip ourselves with the language of emotional intelligence, you know, the ability to express ourselves, the ability to be in touch with our feelings as well, in a way that, you know, as I say, intellectually stimulates you know women and therefore makes us a much more satisfying all-round partner than just someone who puts money on the table.
Yeah. Now let's quickly go on a break and come back, because I want to ask you when we come back how what the role is that women would play and what the role is that men would play in this, because this situation is actually fascinating for me, and we're definitely veering the conversation off in that context. So we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So we're back. What do you think? Do you think this is something that women can help with? Because I definitely have female advice that I give the women to deal mm-hmm. with, which we're not going to go into. Mm-hmm. But what is it that the men need to equip themselves?
I guess as well as being more aware themselves, they need women in their lives to understand that the challenges for men, in a sense that they might be going through a period of transition where they're working towards being more emotionally available and being more, sort of intellectually curious about what's going on in women's lives. So I think there's an element of, giving a little bit of leeway and a little bit of space at the beginning there to kind of help encourage, in a sense, men to open up about this stuff. And so I think that's kind of one thing. But I think then maybe to encourage men to do some more work on it. I mean, I always remember asking a woman, like, what's the one thing that men could do to be better allies to women? And she said, get them to find therapists. And yet it was and it was interesting because basically there's an element of truth in that, right? You know, that either so many men haven't had therapy or are frightened of it, or, you know, like, how do I open up about things? You know, but if you've been through it, I mean, well, you know, I don't mind confessing, I've been through plenty of therapy. It kind of gives you insights into yourself and ways in which you're dealing with things that then help. So maybe one of the biggest roles that women can play in men's lives is to encourage them to get therapy and to be open to the fact that their man is one that gets therapy, you know, and that's not seen in their own eyes.
Watching someone get therapy in order to be more available is a pure act of service, right? It's getting them to that place where they think they will do that is, I think, probably more difficult, because I feel like that's something men have to want to do.
No, I agree. I mean, there is the classic phrase, isn't it? You cannot lead a horse to water and it's or expect it to drink, or whatever that phrase is. But I mean,
exactly.
One of the things I think I'm really interested in is how men motivate themselves. Yeah. To want to be in a space where they do, you know, opt for therapy or do opt to be more emotionally available. And I think that's where, you know, men can role model to other men. So yeah. One of the things I love Daniele Fiandaca, because one of the things that he does, for example, he encourages men to get their fingernails painted. Okay. And if
yes.
you remember at the event that
I
we had,
I remember very well.
I got my fingernails painted, right? And why does he do that? Because he's encouraging men to feel vulnerable. Because once you've had your fingernails painted, as a man, if it's the first time it's happened to you, then you can feel a bit vulnerable at first going out into the street with fingernails painted. Now, actually, as it turns out, often people are very sweet about it. I mean, I had like 3 compliments within the first couple of hours of having my fingernails painted from people out on the street. But maybe that wouldn't always be the case. But it's that thing about, you know, so if Danielle is modeling that, then, you know, I can learn from that. I can model that to other men, and we can model it, you know, we can sort of ripple out the modeling, as it were, so that actually now what we're seeing, and there's quite a few men's groups that now are set up to help men open up there, and there's quite a few men's champions, as it were, role models of this, you know, coming to issues that would have formerly challenged a lot of men with more open minds about kind of, well, how do we deal with this? And how is masculinity changing? How am I changing? But also, not only that, how is masculinity changing in relation to the way that women's expectations are changing? I think in an ideal world, we want to sort of try and equip men to be better partners to women and vice versa. Because if we want to have successful relationships, that's what we got to do.
Yeah, communicating is a really interesting foundation for everything, isn't it? Because if what we're doing is saying, women talk so openly about how much their lives are changing, mm-hmm. and how much we've had to change, because yes. You know, economically, it's not enough to have one breadwinner in the family for the majority of people. You have to have two breadwinners. And if you have to have two breadwinners, then it changes the dynamic of an entire family and how that works, because there's no way you can do it in a traditional way. There's also, I was listening to an article, a podcast yesterday with a divorce lawyer, and he said, well, you know, in the old days, running the house was really hard work. Nowadays, if you say you're running a house and you've got a dishwasher and a washing machine and this, and I wanted this man I really liked, and I wanted to reach through and slap him upside his head for thinking that it was there for, there's a man who's never done it, ultimately.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Ultimately, there's a man who's never done it. So if there was ever a reason for it to be walk a day in my shoes, that was an example.
Oh, no, absolutely. Because like what this guy's completely forgotten is that someone's got to think about loading the dishwasher. Someone's got to think about loading the washing machine. Someone's got to think about whose birthday is it. You know, all those things still end up potentially on the woman's plate if the man's not, dealing with that. So for example, like in our household, right, I have got certain jobs that are mine, which I've agreed with my wife that I will do. Which involved the household, which is great, because then I know what I've got to do. I get on with it. We've agreed it, and that's fine. So,
but you don't see what she does as jobs, or does she not work outside of the house?
Well, she does some work outside of the house, but I mean, basically, I see us both as creating an environment that works for us. It's a household that works for us. We both have roles within that household. As long as we've agreed how that splits up and we're both happy with that
split. And you're both happy, exactly.
Yeah. Then I think it works. Where it doesn't work is if women are silently resentful or maybe not silently resentful about the fact that their partner doesn't do their fair share of the whole thing. And of course, this is where the stresses lie. So for example, I think we've all seen data that shows that in marriage, men tend to fare better health-wise than women, for example. You know, and like, so how is it that women's the marriage is actually not as good for women as it really should be?
But because I think when you put people pleasers into an infrastructure with non-communicative, stiff upper lippers, there is bound to be a place where those clash. Because you've got one people pleasing to the max, because that's what we're trained to be as women. Society trains us to be people pleasers. Otherwise, we wouldn't do all the things that we did that we don't get paid for. And then you've got men who are taught not to communicate, be strong, don't say anything. There is obviously going to be the wildest clash between those two extremes, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah,
and then when the oppressed becomes the oppressor, willingly or unwillingly, you're like, well, you didn't do it for me. Like, you know, so I'm here and I don't have to do it for you. And you're like, wow, at this stage, it's become a battleground and not home.
Yeah, no, exactly. So
let me just finish that thought with one more thing. The number of women that I see when they get divorced, the husbands have to look after the children for a week on and a week off. You're like, if you had just done that before, the likelihood is you wouldn't now be divorced.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But of course, it's very easy to say that after the fact. I guess the good news is that those men still want to play a role in their children's lives. So that's important. And of course, like you said, now they're having to balance up their own work and their 50-50 childcare in a way that they weren't maybe having to do before. But of course, you know, they never saw that and they never saw what was coming. But I hope there is some recognition of the fact that at least they've now realized, even though it's the relationship has ended, as it were, they've still got a responsibility to those children and to play their part. And, you know, and that's certainly something that I personally experienced when I went through divorce, which is that, you know, I sold it for ball game, but, you know, I wanted to be there for my children. I wanted to make sure I was doing my 50% because that was important. So Yeah, it's an interesting observation. But of course, by the time you've reached that point, and there may be all sorts of other reasons why they got to that point, not just because of the lack of 50-50, as it were. But then it's definitely a real wake-up call. And I remember taking the kids to school in the morning, being the only man virtually dropping the kids off. And it's kind of like a weird thing. All the mums were going off to have coffee mornings, and I was heading into the office. It was kind of like a
Yeah.
weird thing. But you know, that was a
No, it's more
reality.
common.
Yeah.
What do you think, and just in closing, what are the two or three patterns you think we'll see over 2026 for allyship, men with women with men?
Well, I
Anything?
did. So I think the thing that's been most important in 2025 and maybe a little bit before was what we've called the gender partnership, where we've brought women and men together to talk about how do we work together in creating a workplace and I guess you know ultimately a home as well that actually works for everybody. So one of the real joys of the allyship work I've been doing, I've been doing it mostly with men, and there have been women, my sort of fellow women colleagues, as it were, doing with the women, so coaching and leading the women, and then but it's bringing them together to talk about okay, how do we work on this together? I think that will be a continuing trend for 2026 of making sure that we build you know places where gender dialogue's really happening, gender partnership is really happening, but of course that won't just happen on its own. Companies have got to make very real efforts to make that happen. And of course, individual men and women have got to want to be part of those conversations as well. And I still see, unfortunately, the fact that we're still a little bit in a couple of silos there. You know, we have International Women's Day, we have International Men's Day. Do we bring people together? Hopefully we do. And that's what we want to do. And there are times, of course, when we all need our safe spaces, you know, so that's good. But ultimately, we're not going to really move forward and more quickly or more sustainably unless we bring people together. So that for me is the key trend that I want to reinforce in 2026 is that gender partnership, that gender dialogue, and creating a workplace that works for everybody, which also means that the home is going to work for everybody too.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like the outlook on it. And it's a really interesting conversation to have because I've always approached this from the women's point of view because I work with women and you work with men. And it's never occurred to me that, in fact, reaching out to you to create that divide and a bridge with what we do is actually a really interesting conversation to have. So thank you very much. I really enjoyed having you on as a guest.
No, thanks, Geeta. It's been a really fascinating conversation, and you've given me plenty of food for thought about, you know, the work that I do with men and how to bridge across that.
Good, because that's what we live for. My name is Geeta Sidhu Rob. My fabulous guest today was Robert Baker. Please look him up, look at what he's doing, look at where he's prolific in everything to do around allyship and men. So you'll find him on many, many different platforms and places. And this is Activate Yourself. We look forward to being with you again soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Geeta Sidhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.